It's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. You know me, the incompetent, untrained psychotherapist. Well, I don't know. That's kind of really like, I don't know about incompetent. That's very self, effacing. That's the self-effacing part of me. I'm really fucking good at it, okay? So shut the fuck up. Anyway, thank you so much for tuning into Radio Free Brooklyn, which is the greatest radio station in the Western Hemisphere, because I've listened to all of them. And you know what? You're going to be the first to hear this, okay? I think we're going to be having a birthday party soon for the station. It's going to be 8 years in May. So if I were you, I would sign up for that mailing list right now if you want to find out about it and you want to get invited, because at Radio Free Brooklyn, we have the most kick-ass parties, you know, and you can come and meet all the hosts and shit like that. It's going to be so good. All right. Let me tell you who's on today. I have this, you know what? I was going to say, he's got a great taste. He's got great, everyone I've had on lately actually has great style of their own. By the way, I always dress like shit, because the reason I dress like shit is because I want to feel relaxed, but no matter how my guest comes in, I want them to feel relaxed. So if I don't put on any makeup or whatever, then, you know, we're cool, right? That's how I roll here. So I want to tell you about Kelsey Warren before I bring him on. I'm going to make an attempt at this. So Kelsey, his band or his musical entity is called Black Emoji, and that's spelled BLAKEMOJI. If you want to go to his website, that's blackemoji.com. His Instagram is black.emoji. But I suggest we're going to play some of his music, but I suggest you go check it out, because it's really good. It's also really, I think, it feels really complex. Like this guy, Kelsey, knows his shit. That's what I'm telling you. He has representation. He's been doing this a long time. He's a full-time musician. No bar jobs, not, or at least not anymore. We'll find out. I bet there's a bar job in his history. I bet this guy has been paid for serving liquor at some point in his life. But anyway, I'm just going to read this, okay? Black Emoji is the brainchild of New York City producer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist Kelsey Warren, blending pop inspirations with an emphasis on electronic music, synth sounds, and intricate writing. Kelsey's sonic dream is brought to life. He was immersed in soul R&B and pop music growing up in South Jersey. After learning piano concertos, jazz guitar standards, drums, and other instruments, Warren became addicted to hip-hop, punk, minimalist classic, which personally I think doesn't go together, which is so special, right? He's agreeing with me. He's supplemented his ever-expanding musical taste with a love of electronic music and synth inspiration, from Kraftwerk to Prince to N.I.N. And we're going to be hearing music from his album called, Eclectro. I love that name. Eclectro. So that's the... But let's talk to him and see what his deal is first. Okay, Kelsey, how was that intro?
That was great. Thank you.
I'm in a weird mood today. Such a weird mood. I don't know what it is.
Weird is cool.
I think I'm just really glad I got through the week. This was like, you know,
crazy week.
Yeah, just a lot of ups and downs. So anyway, So you have a deep history, deep training, deep understanding in music. Is that right? What's your background in music? Like, how did you learn there was music? How did you learn I want to make the music? What was like the beginnings of Kelsey the musician?
I think the beginning stems when supposedly my mother said that I cried a lot as a kid. You know, that's what she said. But
well, but you're obviously obviously too tough.
I was a baby, but apparently the only way that she could shut me the fuck up was to put headphones on my head.
Wow.
So that was the beginning. Just put the headphones and I would sit and just listen to music and then fall asleep.
The beginning of you being manipulated by women, you mean?
That too.
No, that's really cool. So your mom was into music. Would you say?
She was into music, but not like...
Not like you, but like what kind of music? She saw the power in it. What kind of music did she play, do you think?
Oh, man. My mom was into a lot of, you know, adult contemporary and pop stuff.
Crappy music she played for you.
No, I wouldn't say crappy.
Pop.
A lot of, you know, and a lot of just classic soul, you know, Diana Ross and Gladys Knight. She loved she loved Barbra Streisand.
Okay.
And she loved Johnny Mathis. So
okay. Much better than my folks. That's real music.
Is real music, yeah.
Okay. So she had good taste in music.
I listened to all of them except for Johnny Mathis, yeah.
I like Johnny Mathis.
Yeah, it's just not my thing. But
not a whole album, though.
No, goodness, no. And respect. He's an amazing amazing singer.
So much.
It's not my vibe.
Okay, so your mom played a lot of music for you.
Yes.
So you think it kind of got... And that's quality music. It got... Did they take you to see any music, or...?
I went to a few shows with my mom. I don't remember.
But like as a child?
No, I didn't really see a lot of concerts as a child. I didn't start seeing shows more until I was like a teenager, and I would go with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. Mm-hmm. I remember my sister took me to see Kool & the Gang at like a fair.
Are you kidding? That's so awesome.
That was cool. I remember that.
So your sister, so how many kids in your family?
There are three. Me, the youngest, my sister, Colette, who unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago. So fuck cancer. And my brother, Craig Lee.
And where are you in the lineup?
I'm the spoiled baby.
Ah, the baby, the creative one.
Yeah.
And so your sister, your older sister, took you to see Kool. She was into music?
Yeah, it was kind of like everybody was. You know, my sister was more into a lot of the pop standard stuff, you know, a lot of cheesy stuff and Manhattan Transfer.
Then
Barry Manilow. She loved Barry Manilow.
She was
a fan of him.
No.
She was a hardcore fan of him. And my brother was into more like jazz fusion and, you know, alternative rock. You know, my brother got me into Chili Peppers and Fishbone. Oh. And my sister was, you know, Barry Manilow. But,
So you got a pretty wide range of influences.
Absolutely.
Like as a kid.
And the whole underlining thing where everyone came together was, you know, the soul and funk, R&B, you know, it was always Parliament and Prince and the Time and stuff like that, where it was, you know, everybody was into.
Yeah. Listening. Some dance parties, I'm picturing.
Oh, yeah. Fun stuff. Great cookouts.
So you were really brought up. So your whole family enjoyed music.
Yes.
And are there any other musicians in your family or just you?
Just me.
You're the one that really like got into it. And you must have started. How did you start playing music?
I started playing drums to Earth, Wind & Fire records.
Oh, that's terrible. Your poor mother. Yeah. You started on the drums?
It was never.
How old were you?
I was 5 years old.
Holy crap. So where'd you get the hold of a drum set?
Shit, I don't know. My mom bought me a set.
You begged? Did you ask specifically?
I don't remember doing that.
What parent would just randomly buy their child a drum set?
A cool ass parent. She knew that I liked drums and she got me a set. And it was like, it was never one of those things where I never had a parent that told me not to play or you're too loud, you know?
Shout out to your mom.
The arguments were like, mom, you're watching me practice, but she always just pushed me to just pursue playing.
Wow. What a great, great thing. What a shout out, Mom.
Yeah, no, yeah. Viola Orange. She's the best.
Yeah.
She got, you know, and same with guitar. You know, she would, I would rehearse in my room for hours and hours, and then I would look at the door and then she would be there. I'd be like, Mom, get away, you know. And
she got a lot out of seeing your talent and seeing how you were connected to the music,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Now she pushed
me. Do you remember playing when you were five? Did you play? Did you get the drum set and that was it? Did you get like immediately attached to it, or did it take some? Was it like, oh, drums, yes?
Yeah, it was. It was like, oh, drums, yes. And I just couldn't stop playing and, you know.
Playing to music that you were listening to?
Mainly Earth, Wind, and Fire. Something about, I mean, I love everything about Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Right.
The writing, the musicianship, you know, the depth of the whole spiritual thing, everything about them. But something about the drums of their music and the beats just gravitated to me wanting to drum with Earth, Wind, and Fire and try to hold up as a five-year-old.
I love that. I bet they would too. So let's start with one of your songs so people can get an idea of what your music is like. We have, do you want to tell us? I think we're going to play Last Night Lost.
Cool.
From your album. Tell us about it. Tell us a little bit about the album. Give us the backstory.
Awesome. Last Night Lost is the current new single from the album Eclectro. It was, Eclectro came out about, I think maybe a year and a half ago, independently. Mm-hmm. I am now signed to ECR Music Group and they're freaking awesome. And they're doing a thing where they're re-releasing, key titles of my catalog. And this is the second release that they just re-released literally about a week and a half ago. It's in a deluxe edition. So there's extra tracks. It's re-sequenced. It's remastered. It sounds bigger.
And what does better. Last Night Lost mean? Like who is that? Is that about a chick or something?
It's inspired by that and not.
But it's never really about that, isn't it? It's just like the beginning of it.
No, there's certain songs that are written about a specific person. Chick.
This
Absolutely.
One is not though.
No. This is just
right.
a date.
Well, I'm going to give you a pass on this.
Yeah.
I'll
it's for everybody.
I'll dig in on something else. We'll get you on another thing. Yeah. I'll make you uncomfortable.
Awesome.
Okay. So.
Let's raise our
Yay. That was, I love that song.
Thank you. I just love it.
So what you were singing, what were you doing? Like, you wrote the song, I understand that, but what did you play? Like, how was the song made?
I played everything in that song.
That's what I thought. That's crazy.
Thank you.
And you mixed it all? You did the whole thing yourself?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How about that, guys? Can you believe it? He just does that. it's impressive, right? Yeah, it's very impressive.
Thank you.
So one of the things that, I can't say this about every musician, but you seem very educated about music. You have studied music. I mean, there's a lot of, you don't have to do that to be successful, but right. You have gone down that road. You really seem to understand all the equipment, the technical stuff. You occasionally get hired to produce somebody else's,
quite often.
Yeah. You really know your shit and you know all, and you know how to play all the instruments. Like, that's insane. So is that, I'm saying a lot of it is through education, but did you feel like you had, did you study music? Did you study this a lot?
Yeah.
Did you like major in music?
I did major in music. I majored in a lot of different things in college, but it was always music and something, whether it was, I think my last major was classical vocal at University of Miami. I studied jazz guitar. I studied composition in high school.
High school.
A lot of minimalist classical type stuff too, which I love.
In high school?
Yeah.
And where did you go to high school?
Eastern High School, Sinai, New Jersey.
In South Jersey, like a public school?
Yeah, South Jersey. Don't hold that against me. Yeah.
That's a nice school. That must have been a nice public school.
It was. It's really interesting because I don't really know the climate with music in school these days anymore.
I know.
With middle schools and in high schools. But I got lucky.
And did you have a lot of friends who were also into music?
Absolutely.
Like, that's always been your life. Do you feel like that?
Well, I had my crew of people. And it was like
you did.
Six or seven of us that were just music geeks and listened to everything from classical to hip hop to metal. That was just us. That's what we did.
Did you play in bands and stuff?
Yes.
All that shit?
Played in the school band and yeah.
How old were you when you came to New York?
When I came to New York, I was, I don't know. I was 25, I
think,
or
6. Like after college kind of thing?
Yes.
And were you always like, I'm going to be a musician, I'm going to New York? Like, it just seemed like that's... There weren't any like other ways to think about it.
No, that was it. It was go to New York or LA, and I went to University of Miami for college, and basically I moved here. I was like, this is it. I did everything I could do at the time in Miami as far as what I was doing musically. And I was like, I'm going to move to New York and be a big rock star, and that didn't happen.
No, well, you're making a living. That's huge. So I mean, you're a musician. You're a living. You're making a living. So when you got here, what was that like? What year was it? Can I ask?
It was a late
90s.
Don't
have to answer that.
I'm so old.
I'm older than you. I'm in my 60s.
Well, you do not look. You do not look
60s.
That at all.
Yeah, would I'm older than you, baby.
Would not have known.
He's a cute guy, by the way.
Oh, thank you kindly.
He's like, now he's all embarrassed. No, he loves it. No, but it's true. You know that. So anyway, so you moved here, and then what happened?
Late 90s. It was,
In
the 90s.
It. Okay, there we got it.
I loved it here, but it was kind of like
fucked
a...
Fucked up.
Yeah, it was. It was a slap in the face.
It's fucked up here.
It was, but I had so many good times back then, but it was a thing where it was a... I think at the time in Miami, like, I really stood out. And I was kind of put on a pedestal in Miami. And I moved here, and it's like, man, you're just like everybody else. You're not special. No one cares. So it's like it was starting over.
Humbling.
It's very humbling.
Did it change your view of yourself and your role in the world? It must have been like crazy.
Absolutely. There are things that I never experienced before. And then,
like what comes to mind?
I think that I definitely became a tougher person here. Mentally.
You definitely did, because otherwise you'd be crying right now.
Yes, yes.
You wouldn't be here.
There was a lot of, you know, I think I was naive to certain things, and moving here was like, you know, at first I was a loner probably for like the first 2 years, and then, you know, I started getting more confident and more into, you know, whatever scene. A lot of the club scene.
Where were you hanging then?
Lit Lounge. Lit Lounge was my Cheers.
That's Lower East Side.
Yes.
We're talking Lower East Side.
Yeah, Lower East Side was my
So you were Lower
playground.
East Side. Absolutely. Max Fish.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Those were the good old days. You guys missed it. Get out of your basements.
Get out of your basement. Yes.
No, you know what? In all due respect, Bushwick has I live in Bushwick. There's a lot of cool shit happening here too.
I hear.
Yeah, there is a lot of cool shit happening here. Okay. So do you remember your first gig?
Yes. I played at a club called my first gig in New York.
Yeah.
Yes. It was a club called The Spiral, and they were dicks. I remember them being super mean. Or was it Pyramid Club? It was either Spiral or Pyramid, and neither was a good experience at all.
Really? Like dicks?
It was awful.
Like what? Like
just
what?
Just mean. And I'm coming off of like, you know, on some, I'm coming from South Florida on some hippie shit. Like, yeah, let's all get along. And they're like, you got 15 minutes to play. And your set is like 17 minutes. I'm like, wait, what? You know, it was hardcore.
Yeah, those are hard. So did you have a band that you were playing with then, or just on your own?
I had a band.
Were you the lead?
I was.
Okay, yes, so that's a lot of hassle.
Yeah, it was all humbling. There are some clubs in the beginning, which I did not understand. I didn't understand that mentality. I still kind of don't, unless somebody's coming in with an attitude. But,
yeah,
you know, you get to play better clubs later on. Mm-hmm. At least I can say I was here when CBGBs was still around.
And you played CBGBs?
I got to play CBs a few
That's
times.
Cool.
Always a great experience.
I've performed there Dr. Lisa, but.
Nice.
That was a great place.
Worst bathroom in the world, but coolest rock club.
Yeah, it's a great rock club. Classic.
It was a great club.
So, where else did you play that you had good memories of?
Mercury Lounge, which is a club I still play.
Yeah, that's a good place.
That's a great place.
Yeah, that's a great place.
It's still there for a reason, I would say. You know, I had a lot of great shows at coming up at Arlene Grocery.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Pianos. Arlene.
Yeah. Yeah.
That whole
Those
scene.
Are good places.
They were all good places.
That must
good
have been,
people.
Yeah. That's yeah. So are you, I know you're touring now. Are you still playing around a lot or what? Yeah. Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah. We just played a Hard Rock Cafe like 2 weeks ago, I think.
Mm-hmm. But bigger are you still play bigger venues now or Mercury Lounge? Because I want to see you live. That's what
Thank
I'm
you.
Saying. And we want to know.
We will definitely be back.
Because you're traveling now, right? You're going to LA soon. And
yeah,
stuff
LA,
like
San
that.
Francisco. So those gigs
yeah,
are
yeah.
going to
well,
be
Well, when
West
you
Coast.
Come back, I'm going to post. Let me know. We'll post the schedule.
Thank you.
And I want to come.
I would love for you to come. Thank you.
When you play, how many people is on stage?
Four.
Uh-huh.
Four people.
And it's your band. And have you been playing with the same four people for a while?
Like the same three people usually.
three people.
Yeah. So our drummer, Max Maples, he's in Brooklyn. Incredible drummer, great person. Haley Lamb, main keyboard player. She's a Manhattanite like me. Just a wizard on the keys, super sweet. We kind of have like a rotating bass thing. Dave Lowenthal, who's amazing. Marcel did our last show. Mm-hmm. Who else?
But you got a core group.
Yeah. And we're all family.
They're all going to LA too?
No. The no, LA shows are just me.
Oh.
Oh yeah. Oh, I do solo shows.
Oh, too. Okay. So let's talk about how you got into music and how you figured out One of the things that, guys, listen, one of the things that's really interesting about Kelsey, and I know this because I did all the research on him. I did. But the thing is that he really, he's got a real entrepreneur bent in his personality, which is, I believe, part of why he's successful. I mean, do you think that's true?
I guess to an extent.
Yeah, like you learned how, like when GarageBand came out, started, you got on that right away, and you were able to do the whole thing on your own. And I've read about you playing at all times of night and in the park. You're like compulsive about this shit.
Yeah, I'm still like that.
And you talk about, you're very aware of, what I was reading about you was that you really know, you're very aware of the marketing, which is very important. Don't make fun of it, folks. I'm all about the marketing.
You have to be these days.
And you can tell, you really get the subtleties of how a, let's say, a track lands with the public when it goes out, and what makes it better, and or what, you know, what the factors are affecting the success of things, the timing, all that stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're big on, I mean, I think that, I bet that's why people probably want to work with you, because you're really smart about this shit.
It helps. I mean, I feel like it's a sink or swim thing. I mean, times are different. There's people that are doing it way better than me, and I'm like, wow, trying to keep up with them. But at least I look at that and I'm like, okay, maybe this needs to be stepped up and that needs to be stepped up. But, you know, it's great to be an artist. It's great to be, you know, all about your craft and hone in on your craft, hone in on your skills and make the best music, or write the best book, or, you know, kick ass on stage as a comedian. You need to do all that, but it's almost like you're a tree in a forest if you don't really pimp yourself in a way, or put yourself out there, or get people behind you to really, to let people know that this is out. You're kind of, unless you just want to make music in your bedroom, which is cool, no disrespect, then make the music in your bedroom. But if you're trying to make the music in your bedroom, or on, or at a studio or anywhere, and you want to release it, you have to make, you're a product.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For better or worse, some people don't like to hear that, but you are.
Yeah. And so you take pride in that. Which
absolutely.
You should.
I
have to tell you, you got a photographer to do great. Like, even the photographs are spectacular. You have like really original, you had a really great photographer.
Yes. Jeremiah Cumberbatch does a lot of my, photos, and he's amazing. It's kind of like we have like a Batman Robin thing.
Yeah, good graphic design. Everything looks like quality. Everything about what you do says quality to me, guys. Thanks. And he's doing it. You could do it too. Just take pride in it. We're all on that. We're all on that. But I want to hear about how you grew up and like how you. It seems like you have all the skill sets, the music and the business sense and all that. And where let's find out where that came from. So where. Did you grow? You grew up in South Jersey,
yes.
And were your parents? So you had three kids. There were three kids. You were the baby. And were your parents married the whole time?
No. My parents were married, and they divorced when I was five. So I pretty much, you know, I was with my mom for my life. You know, I'm a mama's boy.
I got that.
Yeah, I always say, you know, my mom is responsible for the good parts of me, and my dad's responsible for the bad parts, and an environment is, you know, responsible for a little bit of both.
Did you see your dad regularly growing up?
No.
Really?
No.
What happened?
I don't know. He's addicted to his work. I'm addicted to my work too.
So he was a workaholic.
He was a workaholic, and you know, it is what it is. I'm a workaholic, but I love my friends. Mm-hmm. You know, I have an amazing daughter, Sabina, who I love dearly.
How old is she?
She is 19.
Oh my God, you have a 19-year-old?
A fucking 19-year-old kid.
Where is she now?
I don't know. I don't know where my kids are at.
No, where does she live?
No, she lives here.
She lives in New York, so yeah. You see her regularly.
Yeah, oh, yes.
Is she into music?
No, she's an artist. She's into drawing and animation, and her stuff is amazing.
Yeah?
Like, I'm straight up fan.
Is she in school?
She was in school. She did a year at Lesley in Massachusetts.
Oh, nice.
But,
yeah.
Only 1 year.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
That is okay, especially she's doing nowadays. Her thing.
Yeah.
She's busy. She's working.
She's very, I never get to see her much because she's, you know.
Busy.
She's busy. She's working.
Too
she's
busy a, for you.
Ah, she's got a boyfriend.
She's got a boyfriend.
She's got friends.
You're like 20th on the list.
Ah, yeah. I've become that parent. Like, hey, what you doing? Yeah. You want to go see the Arcade Fire?
So what was that? Oh, yeah, right. So what was that like not having your dad around? Was that? What was that like? Was that just something that you accepted or?
It was something I accepted. It was, you know, I had a real good childhood. It wasn't until I would say later on, like late high school, where I started to realize like, you know what? There's some issues going on here and, it's stemming from this and.
From your dad.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like But like, how did your mom, she shout out again.
Oh.
So she handled all that. Did
she was superwoman. She really was.
Did she ever say any, like how did she just didn't, did she just not care? I mean, she must have cared, but did she just like, no big deal. We're just doing this, guys.
Yeah. I mean, she cared and she just did. All she could to make sure that I had a happy childhood, which I did.
She did.
You know,
she did a great job.
She never talked bad about my dad or that situation. You know, so if there was any like ill will I had towards the situation, it was from coming from me and my experiences and what happened to me, and you know, the whole.
Did you ever stay in touch with him or see him?
Not really. I saw him a few times. Post college, like maybe not a few times, like once. And yeah, I talked to him not a lot. We kind of, you know, started talking again when I remember when there was the, the Michael Brown thing went down. And I started writing a little bit again and pieces and stuff. And my dad was like, a big activist in the 60s and 70s.
Really?
And I didn't really know that he was an activist. I knew him as the guy that sets up businesses and whatever type of business. And he was really successful and just really, really, really successful. And then it would all crumble and then he would do it again, you know? So he was like Sisyphus, you know?
How did you know that if you weren't living with him?
About the activist
businesses.
Stuff?
Business stuff.
Oh, I found out later on. You know, I knew he was busy trying to make shit work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I
And
knew.
What kind of, was he involved in any particular group as an activist or?
Yeah, there were several. I just don't really remember.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's
That's
clips
cool.
and stuff on,
Oh, really?
You know, I Googled.
You can see your, what's, do you want to tell us his name?
No. Francis Warren. It's whatever.
Francis Warren. Okay. We'll go look and see. What a young man! What a daring young man! You must be proud of that, though, right?
I'm proud of what he's accomplished, and I feel like I got a little bit of that fire, from him, because I didn't know this until the whole Michael Brown thing, and he was like, you know, your dad used to do this. I'm like, why the fuck did you not tell me this? And because I had, you know, I was like, man, my dad, he just wasn't around. So it was kind of like, you know, what the hell, dude? And then he was like, I was afraid to tell you because I didn't know what you'd think of me. I'm like, this actually makes me like you. Like, like this is awesome. This is good stuff.
So you did you remember him at all?
Oh, yeah.
Growing
absolutely.
From until you were five?
Yeah, yeah.
And what do you remember?
It was just fun.
He was fun.
You know, when I saw him, he was chill. It was. You know,
he sounds like a real risk taker.
He was like a risk taker, you know, life of the party, you know, that person that walks in and everyone's just like,
guy.
Ooh, you know, Leopold, Leopold, you know, he was like that. That
do you
that
know
dude.
What kind of businesses he was involved in?
No,
but
not
he
really.
Made money and then.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows, right?
Yeah.
So does Did
nothing illegal, just, you know.
No,
just,
yeah. So does happens. That, like, does did that influence you? Like, did you think about him? Them, what was that like? Have you been in therapy? Have you talked about this?
Oh, I've been in therapy, hardcore. Yeah.
So you've been dealing, you've dealt with this issue?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It is. You know, life goes on. It is what it is. And I went through my, well, justifiably so, I went through my, like, you know, how could you do this to a kid, you know, if the kid, unless the kid was a total asshole, I don't think it was. So,
no. Got nothing to do with you. You know that.
Yeah, I know. I know that now. But you know when you're now. A kid,
I know.
You don't know when you're a kid. You think everything is your fault.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to go through some kind of help or else you're just going to, you know, it catches up with you. Kids are sharp. They pick up on this type of stuff.
So you kind of dealt, feel like you've dealt with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I had to. Yeah.
Well, I had to is like not everybody feels that way.
That's true. I didn't, you know, do it as early as I feel like I should have, maybe.
When did you start going into therapy?
I didn't start going into therapy until I moved to New York. So, but it was later on. Yeah, yeah.
When you woke up and were like, fuck.
Oh, man.
I'm not who I thought I was. You must have been really confident as a kid. Were you?
Musically, I was very confident.
Yeah, that would give you real confidence.
You know, I was shy.
Miami. Must have been confident.
Miami, later on, I was huge. I think that's where my confidence, you know, outside of music, but just me as a person, I became more confident living in Miami. And I really became more confident here in New York. I think New York is kind of like the icing on the cake that has shaped me as a person. You know, I understood why some people would come here and then they would leave after a couple of years.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So you started therapy when you came to New York because things...
Not in the beginning. It took me a long time to get to therapy. I don't think I started therapy until like maybe 10 years ago or something. So it's taken a while.
Are you in
while.
Therapy now?
No.
Well,
no,
you are now.
This is my therapy right here.
Well, you know what? I think... that your mom sounds like an amazing, talented mother.
She is, yeah. Shout out to mom.
And I think that can really make up for it a did. Lot.
She was mom and she was dad. And I had so much fun with her. Yeah. I still have fun with her.
Yeah.
She's awesome.
Yeah. But I think that she probably, you know, you're a, you're reasonably well-adjusted, productive person. Because probably you had her in your corner.
Definitely. And I just love music. It's just that thing. It's like, you know, that was the outlet when you didn't have therapy back in the day. You know, I would listen to the fucking Cure, or, you know, Sade and whatever and these things. And when you listen to certain things or you see certain movies where you connect, where you're like, oh, I'm not the only one who's fucked up. You're in the Cure and you're fucked up too. You know, this is awesome. And you just start writing. And there's something about being creative that really, really saves you mentally because you can be doing worse. And if you don't get stuff outside of your system, if you keep all that stuff inside of your brain and your stomach, oh man, years later, it's a pain in the ass. But if you do create, that's why we do this as artists. Artists are fucked up. Because there's stuff going on. So why not put it out there? It's better for you. You become better. It's therapeutic for you and others.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I always say that art is a relationship with something outside of yourself, but yet it is with yourself. So I do think it's like really healing. And I hear that over and over on the show, the same motivations.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Some need to, you know, just get something out.
I could always throw myself into music when I was in a bad mood or if I was going through something.
Mm-hmm.
I would just write.
Right. Yeah. It's an outlet. So is a drum machine before or after your dad? The drum set.
Oh, the drum set was when my dad was around, I guess. So I was like five.
Oh. That's good.
Yeah, it was.
Maybe that's like, why didn't have anything to do with like. Maybe that's, okay, you don't have a dad. We're getting you a drum set. That'll be fine. You'll never think about it.
Maybe it was he left because I was playing drums. Maybe that's what it was. It's like fuck this kid, man.
Yeah, like I am out of here. You bought this kid.
Yeah.
So what was it like in school? Were there other kids that didn't have dads? Was that an issue for you?
I don't know.
Think about it very much.
I didn't really talk about it much. Yeah. It wasn't like, oh, you don't have a dad? I don't have a dad either. Let's go play. You know, it was just, you know. Just
yeah, you didn't think about it. Did you have a lot of friends growing up?
I did. Later on, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and how were your grades?
My grades were good. I wanted my grades to be great because pretty much most of my close friends were all like A+ students.
Holy shit.
And I was trying to keep up with them. So I was like the A-, B+ student. You know, that was me failing up.
Oh, like, wow. I so just want to get an A-. You had good influences.
I did then.
And look at you now.
Then I went to New York and then I was like, oh, no. Uh-huh.
So what is the biggest obstacle do you think you've had to overcome?
Oh, that's a loaded question. There's
or
a lot
one
of answers.
Them. One of them. Just pick one.
Just one.
Or any. Doesn't have to be the one.
I'll
take your time.
I'll think of like three, or I can mention three.
Mention three.
One is being Black and doing music that's predominantly not seen as Black music later on.
I can understand that.
Definitely with, you know, if you're not doing straight hip hop or straight R&B, sometimes they don't really know how to categorize you, which
I could see that
makes no sense to me.
Which is stupid, but I can understand that.
Yeah, it's totally stupid, but, there's literally been stuff I've been told from labels that you'll just be like, what, really? And it's like,
I think that's very common in every field now, though.
Yeah,
personalities. Yeah, you know. So that's one. What else?
That's one. Money too.
Money
isn't everything. There's so much you can do without money, especially now, more so than maybe early 2000s or late 90s.
Right.
But at that time, it was a factor for me. And it still is a factor sometimes. It's not everything. And it could lead to a lot of bad shit, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
However, if you use it wisely, it's great for certain things with promotion and publicity.
Sure.
You know?
You're definitely ahead of the game if you have money or if you're from a family that has money. There's no question about that. We know that.
Yeah. And I would say myself, I don't think I was as disciplined. Coming here. So I got into a lot of crazy stuff. It's cool. You party and you have fun and that's great. But if you get too sucked into doing too much of that and you're not really doing
the work,
you know, there was a time I would say, you know, I was doing more drinking than I was doing music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not healthy. It's not a good thing. It wasn't a good thing for me. There's certain people that can drink and do all the drugs till whatever and still be prolific. You know, Keith Richards is still alive, you know what I'm saying? So I'm not trying to preach, more power to them, but I couldn't do that. I couldn't.
Keith Richards had a lot of help and money as well.
He had a lot of help. He had a lot of money, you know, but still.
So would you say that was some of your 20s?
I needed to kind of get my act together, I would say.
Uh-huh. That seems reasonable for a 20-something musician.
I think so.
Tell me about being what you were saying about being Black and not, your music isn't strictly Black. Tell me about that as an obstacle. I'm curious.
Well, I mean, my music is Black, but it's not.
Well, you're Black.
I'm definitely Black.
So but, you know, whatever you make is from a Black person.
You know, I grew up in South Jersey, so it's kind of like, you know, these white kids.
Did you grow up around white kids?
I grew up well.
Did you grow up in a white neighborhood?
It's predominantly white. You know, there was Black people and Asian people, but it was, you know,
mostly white people.
Yeah, yeah. So they don't know what to do with you because you're this dude that listens to Depeche Mode and Nine Inch Nails, and they're like, oh, you're trying to be white. And then it's like Black kids are saying you're trying to be white because you listen to this. But it's like, you know, now it's not so bad. You know, everyone listens to so many different things.
Now it's not so bad, but you know, we're talking a long time ago at this point. So But you said you had a lot of friends, so.
I did.
So were your friends black or white? Or
both.
Both.
I mean, we had that. That was our crew. It was.
And it really just didn't matter.
No. I remember one time, for some reason, this stays in my head. And this is, again, this is South Jersey. Was it
a middle class neighborhood?
Very middle class, mm-hmm. You know, but it's boring. Ain't shit going on. You know, we go to the mall for fun. That's what we did. We would cruise around in our mm-hmm. little cars in the mall and stuff. And so one time it was there, it was like a crew of people, you know, my crew is like, it's like, you know, black, white. We're all, you know, all guys. And then we see another crew and it's like black, white. And we are talking in the food court in the middle of the mall. And these cops come and they're like, break it up, break it up. And we're like looking at him like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, we didn't know. He said, break it up. It's like, we're not fighting, you asshole. Like, we're just friends.
Oh, because they saw two races. So and it was a big fight.
It was like an even amount of black people and white people. That's and he just terrible. Assumed like there was some kind of fight. And it was just like, nah, man, we're just trying to go to the arcade, you know?
Fucked up planet.
I think that was the first time I realized something was like, okay, this is a little weird.
Good. That was the first time realized that.
That's it wasn't the first.
No.
It was one of the first. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I think maybe having someone in a passing car of white people start yelling at me and calling me the N-word was a big wake up call.
When did that happen?
That was before that mall incident in South Jersey.
That's terrible. Was that upset? That must be upset. That must it was upsetting.
It was confusing.
What do you mean by that?
Because, you know, you
don't understand.
Well, you're not being called that, and you have somebody call you that for some stupid reason.
And you don't know what they mean, really.
You know, I knew what they meant.
No, you know what they mean, but you don't know. Did you know where it's coming from?
No, they didn't know
what
their
intention was, is what I
think. Yeah. Just to be racist assholes. I mean, it happens.
And, yeah.
You know, every black person has gone through something like that. When people say there is an institutionalized racism, I want to slap them.
Oh, no. Like, well, I was talking about this the other day with somebody about, like, even now, I think in this city, I mean, black people are often uncomfortable in the subway because of the police and stuff like that. Is that true?
I would say so more now.
Really?
Yeah.
See,
more now.
We don't even notice. I mean, it's just, we don't.
It must be nice. You know,
no, it's terrible that we're not. I don't want to take that for granted. And I want people to know about that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So if you see a cop on the subway, are you like.
Me personally? No, I'm cool. I'm cool.
Yeah. And
it.
You're not a kid anymore. So.
Yeah. It's a little different for me.
Yeah. And you're nicely dressed. And
yeah. I know. It shouldn't have to be like that, but it is. But you're right.
Yeah.
You know, it's true.
You're right.
I think my main big racism wake-up call was in Florida. Like, these other things were light. But the mm-hmm. first time I had a real big one was, you know, having the cop pull a gun on me, calling me the N-word again, and for no reason. And I was walking home. I'll never forget this. I was walking home. I bought my mom a Michael Bolton CD for her birthday.
Oh, God.
You couldn't get any more.
White.
Whiter than that. So, and it was like one of those nights. It's like, you know what? It's a nice night. I'm going to walk and take the scenic route home. And then it was like, and cops. And it was like, oh, what's going on? You know, I don't know. I've never.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
Not used
Why
to this.
Why would you? Yeah.
And I didn't do anything. I'm literally walking home. I'm just. Like any person on the street.
With a Michael Bolton.
With a Michael Bolton CD.
Did you show it? You should have just
showed it. Oh, yeah. I showed them later.
You did?
But it was like,
so
yeah.
What happened?
Oh, it was crazy. It was the first time.
Did you talk them down or like what happened?
I don't know about talking them down. I think later on it kind of de-escalated, but it was crazy.
What did they say? Did they point their gun at you?
Oh, I was thrown up against the hood.
Oh, my God.
And they're yelling and it was like, it was like the shut up or we're going to shoot you. And I've never seen a gun in my, well, I did see a gun once before then, but to see that and to have that happen and someone pull a gun and you're like, oh, here we go. This is it. I'm going to be the next, you know, Michael Brown or whatever, over something
plenty of people.
So it's an awful thing
it is.
To go through,
it
you know,
is.
Your whole mind is like, oh, you're going to die. You see your
yeah.
whole life in front of you, you know, behind, you know, whatever. You go through all that.
You got mugged.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's a mugging.
Yeah.
Absolutely a mugging. Did you talk to your mom about it?
Oh, yeah. I told everybody. I wasn't silent about it.
Right.
I was scared maybe the first day. And then afterwards, it was like, no. And it was basically like, oh, there was a black guy who robbed an old lady.
Is that what they said?
That's
to
what
you?
They said. And then I just, you know, I was scared. I was scared for my life. And then I got pissed. I'm like, well, something just clicked in my head. Like, all right, maybe I am going to die. So if I'm going to go out, I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, can you describe the black guy? And did he have dreads? Did he have a jerry curl? Did he have an afro? Was it a guy? Was it a girl? What clothes?
Oh,
what shoes?
Wow.
I just went off.
Presence of mind, impressive.
It was one of those.
And so what happened? I'm so glad you were able to like think that and call them out. That's awesome. And what?
Yeah,
how did they
yeah.
respond?
I don't recommend doing that. But he was like, oh, the guy was wearing dark clothing, and I had a white shirt on, and I had like something like some pastel shorts, and I just looked at my clothes, and I looked at them, and put my hands up, like, bro. Yeah. You know?
Uh-huh. And did they let you go?
They let me go after like about 45 minutes. Yeah.
45 minutes.
He's not the guy. And
were
then
they
I was
apologetic?
Like, that's it. Oh, God, no. It was like, it's not him. And then everyone got in their car and it just
oh,
took
God.
Off.
So it, awful. Ugh.
It definitely
is. So awful. Yeah. And we know that that's happening all the time.
It's just, it
yeah.
happens a lot.
Ugh. So do you feel like that in New York very often?
No. It's really interesting. I feel more comfortable here than I did there and maybe other places in the United States.
Yeah.
But
you feel comfortable here? Like
I
pretty much?
I do.
I'm glad to hear that.
I do.
I'm really glad to hear that.
You know, the cop experiences I've had here. I remember 9/11 and I was mm-hmm. here for 9/11 and I lived in Jersey City at that time. So I was happy to be in Jersey City during that time.
I bet.
And it took me a long time to come to New York. I wasn't in a rush. I was
yeah.
nervous.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would have yeah. my friends. Everybody wanted to see me during that time. They were coming from New York
oh,
and
yeah.
visiting me. So one time I was like, all right, this is it. I'm ready to go to Ground Zero. And it was me and another brother. And we got out of the subway on 14th and 6th off the PATH train. And we were just walking around. Looking at New York and like, this is so weird. It looks so different and it's starting to get dark. Then these two cops come and like, hey, hey. And we both like have like long dreads.
Oh,
and,
okay.
You know, I had the leather jacket and I was all like punked out.
Yeah.
And he had yeah. long, long dreads and we were just like, oh, fuck, here we go. Like, this is it. And they're like yelling at us like, yo, yo. And they come up to us like, are you guys okay? It's getting dark out here. You know, it's like you shouldn't be around. And we're like, oh man, we're okay. We're cool. But there was something about that period. I would say being here around 9/11 and being here during the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
There's something about New York where people had that sense of unity.
Yeah.
That sense of, oh, we are all in something together, despite
yeah.
our differences.
So you're saying the cops were actually showing concern for you.
Awesome.
They were worried about you.
Yeah, yeah. Genuinely
oh,
so.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, so, it's really, like, the whole policeman thing in this country is just, I mean, there are, being a cop is, there's a lot of respectable cops. It's
absolutely.
A really hard job.
I have friends who are
and
cops who are amazing.
It's a really important job, and, well, America's got so many problems right now.
Yeah, big time. It's a crazy.
Yeah.
It's a crazy, crazy time. Right
so we've
here.
Got 5 minutes left. We got 3 minutes for one more song. So should we? I wanted to ask you about your girlfriend. Let's see if we can do that really quick. So you're dating
from cops
somebody,
to girlfriend,
right? We're gonna give it a minute. We're gonna. You're dating somebody, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
Who? Tell us about it if you can.
She lives in Canada. She lives in Vancouver.
A long-distance relationship.
Yes, yes, yes.
And how long have you been dating her?
Almost 2 years.
And do you think you're ever going to wind up in the same city?
That would be great. I would love that. Yes.
But she'd have to move here.
Or I'd have to move there.
Would you do it?
Yeah, I love Canada.
Are you thinking about it?
I don't know.
How long have you spent? I don't know. We don't have enough time to talk about whether this is an intimacy problem. I'm always suspicious.
No.
Of long-distance relationships.
I was suspicious, too, because I would get into them with the intimacy issue. And then after the last one, I was like, I'm never, ever
going to do that again.
Yes, several times. But
how did you meet her?
I met her online. I was doing press for an album I had called Kumi. And this is like mm-hmm. maybe 2019, mm-hmm. I think. 2018, I can't remember. But around that time. And I had a publicist who was awful. And basically, I just took whatever I could get from this publicist. And he's like, oh, you had this interview with this blog. And I'm like, oh, man, sure, whatever. I don't care. And what did we use back then? Skype.
Oh, wow. And you met her on Skype?
Yeah, she was interviewing me. And, mm-hmm. it was like,
and then you went out on, I'm going to have to cut you short. You yeah. went out on a date?
No, we just
You
made
never
friends.
Went out. Have you gone out on a date with her since? Have you ever gotten out on a date?
No,
with her?
Oh, yes, we have.
Okay,
yes.
Good. I'm going to have to, because I want to play some more of your, I want to play the song Mainstay. But I just want to tell everybody, thanks so much for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on Radio Free Brooklyn. Please check us out at radiofreebrooklyn.org. And don't forget to check out blackemoji.com and on Instagram at black.emoji. Okay, Mainstay. Want to give us like 2 seconds what this is about?
Mainstay is just being there for somebody as to
being
sum up.
Somebody's person.
Yeah. To sum up everything, it's always, you know, there's always going to be, not always, but if you have people that are going to have your back, always rely on them. Don't take that for granted, though.
I can't read lines of revision. Skeptical with reason. Truth behind the screen. Damage from the lie. Fall back 4 times the charm. You got 5 more lives to go. I don't fuck up. Hypnotize, prevent the next mistake. Then the vines that grow so soon will occupy, erase.